This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
Welcome back to The Edge here on a Wednesday. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds with you on VSiN and VSiN.com, the sports betting network, filling in for Jonathan Von Tobel. And want to make note, in the last segment of the last hour, we spoke some college football with Dan Saley, and I misunderstood him there. I thought he was on all five favorites that he went down, but he was actually on one underdog. He was on Michigan over Michigan State, laying the points there, laying the points with Purdue over Illinois, laying the 1 point with Hawaii over Wyoming, laying the points with San Diego State over Utah State, but he was taking the points with Georgia State against Coastal Carolina. So just wanted to clarify that for all of you. Now we switch over to the NFL. We bring in one of our favorites, Mr. Frank Schwab. He's an NFL writer for Yahoo. You can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. Frank, it's great to speak with you again. I was talking with our producer, Jacob. We used to join each other all the time on the weekends in the Green Zone. Good to be back together again, my friend.
Absolutely fun times. It's been, look, we didn't even know there'd be a season a few months ago, right? Like, we didn't know, and now, you know, it's going as kind of smoothly, and it's been a great season, great football, great action. Who couldn't love this?
Wes, it's a sign that things are starting to return to normal that we can talk to Frank Schwab again.
Yeah, absolutely. I like talking with Frank because he gets it not only from a journalistic perspective, but also is a usual entrant into the super contest over at Westgate Superbook, and really understands it from a betting angle that a lot of reporters do not.
All right, well, let's dive into a betting angle, Frank, for Thursday Night Football, the matchup from the NFC South this week with the Atlanta Falcons visiting the Carolina Panthers. And the Panthers opened up as a 2.5-point favorite. It moved to 3 for a little bit, came back down to where it is now at 2.5. And Wes and I were talking about this a little earlier, Frank. One thing I like to look for in the NFL is when you get an underdog that wins a game outright, which the Panthers had done on a couple of occasions this year, and then they switch over into the role of a favorite. Oftentimes, that's a bad recipe in the NFL. Now, the Panthers, of course, did not win last week, but they have not been nearly as successful in the role of the favorite, and here they are, favored by a couple points over Atlanta.
Yeah, I get that. The Panthers are a team I switched on very quickly. I thought this team was going to be one of the worst in football. And then they really weren't. They were competitive early on. They, you know, the Bucs got the backdoor cover in week two. But then you just saw a different Panthers team. You realize this team can put up points pretty easily. They have, you know, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, Mike Davis is playing great. They do have guys. Teddy's playing fine. I respect his coaching staff. Love Joe Brady. Who doesn't? Anybody who has made any money on LSU last year likes him. So I'm on the Panthers here. I just, you know, the Falcons, I think that when you switch over to a new coach, that momentum can take you a little bit, like a few weeks maybe. Sometimes it lasts longer than that, but usually it's you get that burst, you know, okay, new thing, you got to impress the new coach or play harder for this guy I like better, whatever it is. You know, for them to lose last week like they did, I mean, how much motivation are we really getting out of the Falcons here? They're 1-6. Their season's done. They have had three of the worst losses we've seen in many years. I like the way the Panthers play. I like the way they're prepared. I just like their coaching staff, really. I'm very, very impressed with Matt Rhule and his crew. So I get what you're saying. Yeah, they have not been very good when it comes to the role of favorites. But I just, boy, I just don't really have any faith in the Falcons. They're one of these teams that kind of looks good on paper, but where are the results? I was low on them early in the year. Somebody puts together a list of all the power rankings and where everybody has them. And I was low on the Falcons by like 10 spots. And I'm still with that. I just don't think the Falcons are a very good football team, and I just have more reasons to back the Panthers here.
Frank, my hometown team, the Indianapolis Colts, take to the road off the bye week to face the Detroit Lions. And look, when you look at the Colts' schedule after this first weekend in November for the rest of the month, Baltimore, Tennessee, Green Bay, and Tennessee again, all 5-1 teams. So this is it almost seems like it's a must game in that regard for the Colts. Like, this is one that they can't give away like they did Jacksonville. And then you have on the Detroit side two road wins, but they were against Jacksonville and Atlanta. So how much are you buying into the Lions here at this point?
It's, you know, and that's a good point on it, on Indy. I think that, is it a look ahead Or is it, hey, we need to get this game because we can't really depend on running the table in November. We'll see about that. I think that Detroit, I like everything about Detroit except their head coach. If they basically anybody other than Adam Gase had coaching them, I'd feel so much better about backing the Lions. I think that this is a pretty good team. This is a team that, you know, it's always going to be in games because, you know, once they have to kind of open the offense up late in the game and stop feeding the ball to 35-year-old Adrian Peterson, they do look like a pretty good team. I don't know. I can't get over the fact that, you know, if you're playing the Lions, you're backing Matt Patricia. He's not a good coach. This coaching staff is just a terrible coaching staff. It is. I mean, that's been proven time and again. They got lucky last week to get that win. I don't know if that gives them momentum or not. This game was the hardest on the board for me because I looked at it a few times. I like taking a quality team, getting points like the Lions. I do think they're talented. I think that, you know, I recently played them to win the NFC North just because I thought the odds were really good, and I'm not completely sold on the Packers. Obviously, way down on the Bears. For what their record is, but at the same time, you're asking Matt Patricia to outcoach Frank Reich, and that's a tough deal for me. So I kept bouncing back and forth on this game. It's going to be a pass for me because I could probably change my mind 100 times before game time. But if you got a strong angle on this one, God bless you, because I surely don't know which one way with this one is going.
Frank, I think you echo the sentiments of a lot of bettors and sports fans with the Detroit Lions, and I'm one of them. I made this game a pick'em, but I think it's very difficult to bet the Lions because of what you said with Matt Patricia, because of what you said, they're a very good team. I think they have a lot of talent, and that has shown. But yeah, that head coaching, you know, the man in charge there, you know, makes you a little bit gun shy. Another game that I made, it's a very similar line to this one, and I also made it a pick'em, was the Cleveland Browns hosting the Las Vegas Raiders. And I think it might be kind of good for the Raiders to get out of town and get on the road. They've faced a couple of very tough teams here recently in the Buffalo Bills, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, not that the Browns are bad. Obviously, they have a very good offense. Their defense is surrendering a lot of points, and that really plays into the hands of the Raiders. Their defense is not that great either, but I think their offense might be better than Cleveland's. I think this is a game the Raiders can win outright, Frank.
Yeah, it's a good, I don't disagree. I'll probably be on the Browns, but I don't know that I feel it's too, you know, when you get to the NCAA tournament, right, and there's two teams you love to play on, and then they get in a bracket together, you're just angry. That's kind of how I feel about this, because I really like the Browns. I'm a believer in the Raiders. I think they're a good quality football team. So I think the Browns' biggest problem is they're not as good as the Ravens or Steelers. They can't punch up in weight class. They just can't. They're not that team yet. But they have been handling teams that they should handle. I should have covered last week. Thanks a lot, Cody Parkey. And I think that the Odell Beckham injury doesn't hurt them. I know that sounds crazy, and I know that, look, Beckham impacts the game in ways other than just the stat sheet. The defensive coordinators have to account for him. You have to know where Odell is on the field all the time. I get all that. But when you look at his numbers, he has just not been an impact guy for them at all. And Rashard Higgins, I'm not saying he's Odell Beckham, but I think he can reasonably replace him. So if this line has come down at all because of that injury, I don't think that's justified. I think that this offense is a run first, two tight end offense. It's going to be just fine without Odell Beckham. And, you know, I think that, again, I kind of trust the Browns when they're playing the team they should beat. And I think that the Raiders are not the Ravens, are not the Steelers. They kind of look to me like a team the Browns should beat. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Raiders won. I do believe in this team. I think Derek Carr is one of those guys who, ever since the thought crept into everybody's mind that he should be replaced, everybody has ignored every good thing Derek Carr has done. He's not a bad quarterback. He is not the problem for the Las Vegas Raiders by any means. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but he's not weighing them down either. This is, to me, two pretty evenly matched teams. I get it. If you want to take the Raiders on the points, that surely makes sense to me. But I kind of feel like the Browns are going to be a pretty good play if they're playing a team that isn't really far ahead of them in talent level.
Frank, this one's a tough call personally for me, and this being the San Francisco 49ers at Seattle. And look, 49ers getting the support early on. They opened 4, now down to 3, and even juice to their side. So Seattle kind of a weak 3-point favorite here, if you will, because it's like it looks like a buy low spot on Seattle. But when you get a team that's off that first loss, sometimes that materializes into the next week, and that's what concerns me on Seattle. Do you think San Francisco is back off that Super Bowl hangover based on what we've seen?
Well, it sure looked a lot better. I the one thing that bothers me for San Francisco this week is the injuries. I mean, Kyle's a good coach. He's like his dad, who I covered for many years out here in Denver, who you can take out the street and play him at running back and he's going to get 100 yards. But the 49ers still down 4 tailbacks for this game. Mostert's out. Tevin Coleman might come back, but we don't know, you know, if he's going to be ready for a full workload. Jeff Wilson's obviously out. And then there's a weird Jerick McKinnon thing where they didn't play him at all, and it seems like maybe he's either in the doghouse or banged up or whatever that is. That's 4 tailbacks and a run-first offense. And Deebo Samuel's out, too, and that's a big deal. This team has been beat up a lot this season. They're getting a little healthier, but there's still a lot of guys out. And, you know, what would this line be? Seattle held on to that 10-point lead. Now, I know you can't play that game with every, you know, of course, you know, they did blow a 10-point lead because their defense can't cover anybody. But I just wonder if this is a little bit of an overreaction to Seattle almost. I mean, I heard this week about, like, oh, Russell Wilson's not the MVP anymore. It's Tom Brady. It's Kyler Murray. I'm not giving up on Russell Wilson yet. Metcalf's great. Lockett's great. I think that they can. I don't love if it's 3.5. That hook is scary because these teams always play close. But I think Seattle bounces back. I think they're a good team, and I just worry about the 49ers being banged up at some key spots, especially running back. I mean, I know that they can seemingly get 100 yards out of anybody, but at some point you reach a tipping point where, you know, Jermichael Hasty is not going to run up and down on the Seahawks defense.
He is Frank Schwab. He's an NFL writer for Yahoo, and you can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. And it's funny, Frank, I was thinking the exact same thing this morning about Kyle Shanahan and his father, Mike Shanahan, just picking up, you know, the guy off the end of the roster and throw him in at running back and he becomes a Hall of Famer like Terrell Davis or something. I mean, the Shanahans have a knack for that. Absolutely. Let's get to another game this week. Certainly maybe the marquee matchup on the board, and that is the Baltimore Ravens taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Baltimore is off of a bye week. Pittsburgh undefeated, escapes with a victory after Gostkowski misses the field goal against Tennessee last week. Pittsburgh opened up as about a 4-point underdog, even 4.5 points in many spots, but now it is settled into 3.5 in favor of the Ravens. What do you think about this one in this AFC North matchup?
Right, and I wish I could give you a more detailed analysis than this, but I basically look at it, and if I see something other than 3 or above 3, I'm just taking the other team. I'll just take the underdog. Like, why would we push this game above a field goal for either of these teams? If we get to the second meeting and the Ravens are plus 3.5 at Pittsburgh, I'll take the Ravens. No problem. This screams to me that it is a field goal game. I think that the coin flip, I think you play this 10 times and these teams go 5-5. I think they're really well matched up. The Ravens, who I've been high on, they were my number one team preseason. I played a future on them, won the Super Bowl. I thought they could get over the hump, but they haven't been that impressive this year. They've been good, but their offense just hasn't been what it was last year by any means. Now, is that part of the Ravens making a conscious effort to say, we're not going to run Lamar Jackson 200 times this year? When we need him, he's going to be there, but we're not going to run him, you know, 15, 18 times against the Bengals because we just don't need to beat them. That might be it. And maybe we'll see, you know, 2019 Lamar Jackson back this week. But I just think these teams are very, very even. You look at any of the advanced tests, DVOA, whatever, they're neck and neck, right, with each other. They bring the same strengths to the table, both well coached. The Steelers have a ton of guys on offense who can beat you. The Ravens have a ton of ways to beat you. To me, this is it's a coin flip game. At very worst, it's, you know, somebody's going to win by a field goal, and I can't see the Ravens blowing them out, so I'll just blindly take the Steelers if you're giving me more than 3, because why not? I don't see any reason to have this at any higher than 3.
I would pretty much agree, Frank. It seems like it's that way with the Ravens and the Steelers every year. I've got about just 30 seconds. Real quick, I think the Vikings and the Packers is a very interesting game. Do you have an opinion there?
This has been working for me on the Packers. It certainly worked when they played the Bucs, and then it worked again last week. If the Packers are playing a bad defense, I'm just going to take the Packers. They are their front runner. Their offense just blows out bad defenses. But when they've played, the one good defense they played was the Buccaneers. They didn't do anything against them. So my handicapping with the Packers is basically, is the defense they're playing good or bad? If they're bad, I'll just take the Packers until they prove me otherwise. And if they're playing one of the elite defenses, maybe Aaron Rodgers doesn't look like the MVP we've seen in many of these games.
That is Keep It Simple, Frank Schwab, everybody. I hear you, man. Well, thanks as always for joining us and enjoy the games this weekend, Frank.
No doubt, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, all right, Frank.
That is Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports, covers the NFL for Yahoo. I'd like to talk to you and get your opinion about that Minnesota game. Zimmer and company come off the bye week. We've seen the line move in favor of the Vikings a little bit. I think it's an interesting spot. Frank makes sense. Aaron Rodgers and company can take advantage of a bad defense. We'll see.
I took Minnesota +7. They are going to get Dalvin Cook back.
There you go.
And Minnesota's offense has been really good, even though their defense has not been up to snuff. Their offense has shown they can trade scores with teams.
Talking a little golf, next up on the Edge, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. With the Masters just around the corner, Bet Rivers is giving away $50 in free bets for every $50 in wagers you make on PGA events. It's simple. Bet now until the Masters starts and get up to $200 in free bets from this promotion. As always, great customer service and the only one-time playthrough at Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Must be 21 years or older, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Colorado, call 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. Back on the Edge with Wes Reynolds and Brady Cannon on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and it's time to talk a little golf. Speaking of that Bet Rivers promotion, the Bermuda Championship at Port Royal Golf Course in Southampton, Bermuda, similar to the Punta Cana Championship, Wes, in that this is only the second year that we've had this event, and also that it used to be an alternate field event. It is for the first time in a few weeks that we have a full field as opposed to a limited field, but this will be a standalone tournament, and it comes with all the bells and whistles, a trip to the Masters, FedEx Cup points, and all that good stuff. They are getting this underway tomorrow in Bermuda with a less than stellar field. Brendan Todd is your defending champion.
Yeah, and much like that event in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic a couple weeks ago, the betting favorite is Will Zalatoris, who's been kind of the big form guy this summer. Of course, has got all these top fives and top tens on the Korn Ferry Tour and a win, including a tied for six at Wingfoot at the U.S. Open. Basically, Zalatoris is now in the position where he basically only has to make the cut to get that special temporary PGA Tour membership this week. And look, he has the game. He's obviously now worked his way into the top 70, top 75 in the world. Was very much too short for me. Brendan Todd is the only guy who won this event last year. He's the only guy that played out at Sherwood and that played those two events, kind of that little mini West Coast swing with the two Asian events moving stateside. So a downfield this week, not a lot of guys playing. There may be a couple more play at Houston next week because we're going to have the Masters in 2 weeks. So very wide open for me. And I went a little bit down the board from the top guys, but clearly Zalatoris has the game. He's going to win on the tour, but you're just not getting enough good price for him to get his maiden here.
The shortest shot I took was Doc Redman. He opened up at 36-1 at Circa, now down as low as 22-1. Been a pretty popular selection as far as the shorter shots in the field. About Zalatoris, and I read that earlier today, I think he has to, at worst, finish in a tie for 69th or something.
Which basically makes the cut.
Exactly. Do you think that could possibly work against him? I would imagine he knows this.
Mm-hmm.
And, all I got to really do is show up. I wonder if that's maybe a red flag to go against him.
Well, and I mean, he's going to get that membership in terms of the FedEx Cup points required, where he can pretty much get in all these events, and it's only a matter of time. But he was just a little bit short for me in this price. And look, he ended up finishing tied for eighth at that Punakana. He kind of backdoored his way on Sunday with a really low round to get in that top 10. So I would kind of expect something similar, a slow start and then maybe a big round on the weekend. My two shortest shots I took, they're 33-1 at Bet Rivers. I got them both at 40. The brothers Henrik.
Yeah,
is who I took this week. Henrik Stenson and Henrik Norlander.
Couple of Swedens.
Yeah, Stenson now outside the top 50 for the first time in 8 years. But we know how great he is. This is a very short course here at Port Royal in Bermuda, about 6,800 yards. So don't have to be a big hitter here, and you can be like Henrik Stenson and hit old trusty or three wood. Driving accuracy and GIR, he's always really good. He's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit. Keep in mind, he did win in December at that Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas, another kind of an island type event here. So I think he could go well. Henrik Norlander, 40-1 as well. Fourth at the Sanderson Farms last month. He was third in putting average. He goes along on these coastal courses too. Sea Island, mm-hmm. where they play the RSM Classic. The Sony Open at Wailea in Honolulu. Mm-hmm. He goes really good on those courses, so Henrik Norlander was another guy I took a look at.
You know what makes a lot of sense about Henrik Stenson, too? Supposed to be pretty calm on Thursday when they open up this tournament in Bermuda, but Friday and Saturday supposed to blow pretty good. Saturday, really, the high water mark of about 25-mile-an-hour winds and then calming back down to about 15 miles an hour on Sunday. But the last 3 days of the tournament should have a lot of wind. Anybody better in the world in playing in the wind than Henrik Stenson? We saw him win a British Open doing that.
That claret jug to prove it, that he drank on the little skateboard as part of the Dreams Challenge that has been going around with that Fleetwood Mac song.
We'll talk about who's going to win the AFC and the NFC next, right here. See if we can find an edge on the edge on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's a big week here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and we have some great news for everyone. Starting right now, you can watch every VSiN show for free on VSiN.com all week long. Watch Follow the Money at 7 a.m. Eastern, a numbers game at 10 a.m., the Lombardi Line, My Guys in the Desert, all of our 14 hours of live daily sports betting programs, and it's all for free 24-7 on VSiN.com this week. While you're there, check out the 10-day free subscription trial to sample everything we have to offer, including the daily best bets email and our point spread weekly betting guide. This is the perfect week to get more from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Head to VSiN.com now and start watching for free. Not a bad deal there. This is The Edge. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds with you on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And want to see if we can find some edges in the futures market for the AFC and NFC champions, the two teams that will represent in the Super Bowl, Wes. And, you know, it's funny, Jacob, that you came up with this topic to discuss today because we're at the midway point of the season. And I actually just made a couple of bets on a few teams to win the conference. We're not quite at the midway point. We're headed into week 8 of 17. The AFC looks like this. The Chiefs, the defending champions, are on top at 2-1. The Ravens are at plus 325, and these are courtesy of our friends at Bet Rivers. The Steelers are plus 425. Then on down the line, the Titans at 10-1, the Bills at 11-1, the Colts at 13, the Raiders at at 30-1. Have you made any plays, Wes, or anything look attractive to you?
Yeah, I haven't on this current AFC market, but the Colts I don't really want to go with because of what I brought up with Frank Schwab. This November could be a November not to remember or November to forget, considering they have games against Baltimore. They have two games against Tennessee. They've got basically all 5-1 teams after they get through this Lions game, which hopefully for them is a win. So was kind of looking and digging at the schedules here. The favorite, the Chiefs, they do have three road games that are a little bit tough. They have a road game at New Orleans. They have a road game at Tampa Bay. Then they have to come here to the Owl, I guess is what JBT, the usual host of this program, calls Allegiant Stadium, the Owl, face the rematch with the Raiders. And then Ravens and Steelers really have very similar schedules. Of course, they play each other twice. They both have to go on the road and play Cleveland. I believe Steelers have Buffalo and the Ravens got to play Tennessee. So has to play another good team in that stretch. So as I'm looking at this, I'm trying to find some value down the board, Brady. I really am. But the Bills, to me, are shaky at 11-1. And they've kind of come back to earth a little bit. You know, maybe Tennessee. I mean, we'll see how Tennessee does this weekend. I'm a little surprised that they're getting that much action at Cincinnati, where it's up to 6 in some spots, because their O went last week. They were 5-0, and now they're 5-1. So now having to go on the road as a favorite to kind of get right against a team in Cincinnati that can put up points. So,
feisty.
Yeah. So looking at that, Pittsburgh was a team I liked going into the season, even though I do kind of like Baltimore this week. I think if you can get that down to 3, that is a buy low spot on the Ravens, because bettors remember what they see last, and bettors especially remember what they see in primetime games. Mm-hmm. And what did they see in primetime game with the Baltimore Ravens? They saw Kansas City put it to them right on their own home field at M&T Bank Stadium. So, you know, I'm not convinced really of the Ravens. I would still have them power rated ahead of the Steelers, though, and I do like them this week. So if I'm going anything in that market, it's probably going to be chalk, Brady.
Well, you know what? I did go chalk, and I cannot see anybody beating Kansas City. I think you can argue Kansas City's better than they were last year.
Well, and now what they have is what they've shown, and they showed it in that Buffalo game, that game that got moved to Monday night where we had that Monday night doubleheader a couple weeks ago. They can run the ball.
Oh, yeah.
They can really run the ball.
And they add Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, you have Bell. You have Edwards-Helaire. So Mahomes doesn't have to be great. He doesn't have to put up, and you know at any time he can put up a high 300, 400-some-yard game, but they don't really need that. The one concern for the Chiefs that they do got to tighten up, they got to be able to stop that run better. Even against Denver last week in a game where Denver turned it over and that kind of put it out of reach for him, Denver was able to run the ball on them pretty easily. So that's, I think, the one chink in the armor for this team. But they're the rightful favorite. I think they have the least weaknesses versus the other teams kind of at the top of that board.
I like to do two teams in each conference, and I was really impressed with the first half that the Steelers played last week against the Titans. I thought maybe that was their best half of football all season long. Extremely efficient running the ball. We'll see how the defense is able to heal with Devin Bush on the mend. But I went with the Steelers and the Chiefs. I'm with you on the Bills. That was my preseason pick, but I don't think they're quite ready yet. Switching over to the NFC West, you've got the Buccaneers as the favorite. Tampa Bay at +350, the Seahawks at +450, the Packers at 5-1, Saints at 6, the Rams at 8-1, and then all the way down to the Lions at 40-1. Anybody that you've done anything with here?
Well, no, I haven't, but I think you get a little bit more value down the board,
yeah, I think so.
In the NFC.
A little more
really,
wide open.
Than you really do in the AFC because, look, Buccaneers are obviously playing very well right now. Tom Brady has proven that he's not quite dead yet. He's not totally washed up. And the defense, especially that front seven. Now, if you can avoid that pressure, you can throw on this secondary. But just looking at all these teams, they all got weaknesses. You look at the Saints. Drew Brees hasn't been able to really throw that ball down the field, but he was good last Sunday, and they're just having to call a different offense.
Right.
They're having to use a lot more screen games. They're having to use a lot more middle to intermediate routes, especially because he had those top two receivers out last week. Green Bay, probably to me, of those top four has been the most impressive, even though they did lose at Tampa Bay. But I think the offense has been really good. In that second year with Matt LaFleur, they've been very balanced. It hasn't just been Aaron Rodgers having to make all the plays. They've got a good running game. The defense has been good enough, I think, to win games because their offense has been so good. So of those four teams, I probably like Green Bay the best at 5-1.
Here was my thinking in this one, and one of the teams I took was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I really am impressed with their defense, and now they're going to add Antonio Brown for Tom Brady, so that makes the offense even better. I don't think the Seahawks are good. Russell Wilson's great.
Their defense is just too bad for me.
No, I can't bank on their defense.
They can't stop the pass at all. I mean, Russell Wilson has absolutely carried that team on his back. So, and with New Orleans, their defense has kind of really carried the day for them, more so than the offense. So I'm not in disagreement with you on Tampa Bay, but of those top four, I do like Green Bay the best.
I don't think the Saints are that great of a team. The team I went with is a team that I picked at the beginning of the year to win the NFC West, and that is the Rams. And I got them at plus 850. So the Rams and the Bucks, the Steelers and the Chiefs are the four choices I made for conference winners. We'll see if I get a hedge opportunity, maybe get all four of them into the tournament. We'll come back and wrap up the program. It is The Edge here on VSiN and VSiN.com, the sports betting network. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. You instantly get a list of quality candidates from Indeed's resume database the moment you sponsor a job. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. It is The Edge on a Wednesday. Brady Cannon and Wes Reynolds with you, filling in for Jonathan Von Tobel. And Wes, let's wrap up the program with some more college football. We got started with Dan Saley about an hour ago, and we'll finish up with some more games on the slate for Saturday. We'll start with Mississippi State at Alabama, and it has not been a great start for Mike Leach. Ever since he pulled off the biggie in week one over LSU, they have lost three straight. Now, they're off of a bye week here, but catching 31 points from Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, and I actually did take Mississippi State small here. I got them at 31 in the hook. And look, this is a hold-your-nose play. It absolutely is, considering Mississippi State, they had that nice win at LSU where Costello broke the SEC single-game passing record. And ever since then, he's got one touchdown versus eight interceptions the next three games. The freshman Will Rogers has played some for Mississippi State. Plus, Kylan Hill, who was the All-SEC back, he hasn't practiced since, like, the Kentucky game week. And it looks like he's probably going to leave the program and maybe start to prepare for the NFL draft. So this is a team in disarray as they're learning new systems on both sides of the ball. It's not really a play on them, even though Mike Leach is 7-0 ATS as a career underdog of a big number, 24 or more. I just think with Alabama, this is kind of a get-through-it game to me because they've had so many games in a row where Saban's gone against former assistants, that being Texas A&M, and then they had the game at Ole Miss, and then the big win over Georgia, and then they go blow out Tennessee on the road. Alabama's got a bye week on deck, and then they have the big rematch with LSU, of course, beat them last year and kept them out, essentially out of the college football playoff for the first time that the college football playoff has been in existence. So they're clearly going to be wanting to get at LSU, especially an LSU team that it looks like it's ripe for the pickings this year. You look, though, at Mississippi State. They are holding their opponents to just 295 yards a game. That's actually number one in the conference. And So
yeah, it doesn't sound like Mike Leach, right?
I know. Mike Leach has a much better defense than he has an offense in Starkville this year. But and I think Alabama, look, they can be had a little bit. I don't think the defense is bad. I don't think it's all of a sudden, okay, they don't have five-star dudes. They've got three-star dudes. No, they still got five-star guys. But the defense is worse usually because the offense scores so quick.
Right.
So it puts them on the field more. I just think that this is one of those don't get anybody hurt. You know, let's get through it. We know we're better than these guys. You kind of saw it a little bit, albeit a more of an extreme with Clemson and Syracuse last week. Where Clemson was like a 45-point favorite. It went all the way up to 47. It was a one-score game in the third quarter. It's kind of like, okay, you know, we know we're better than these guys. This isn't a sense of urgency to just stomp a mud hole. I mean, now, they're perfectly capable, Alabama, of stomping a mud hole in almost anybody, but I like Mississippi State in the points here.
Texas at Oklahoma State, and it was kind of a ho-hem effort for Texas last week against Baylor. Game got off to a real slow start. They ended up winning that one over the Bears. Good game for Oklahoma State as they were locked in a back-and-forth battle with Iowa State, and they came out with a 3-point victory over the Cyclones. And Cowboys are 3.5-point favorites over the Longhorns here in Stillwater on Saturday.
Remember the popular trend of Tom Herman as an underdog when he was 12-1? ATS. Well, now he's just 4-5 in his last nine. So that's not the easy money common trend that you hear on every single betting program, either here on VSIN or others across the marketplace. But that said, I do kind of like Texas here, and it was 4 is when I got a little piece of it. It's pretty much 3.5 now. Everybody kind of faded Oklahoma State last week because I think that they're seen as a bit of a paper tiger. In terms of they're the only undefeated team in the Big 12 for college football playoff purposes, but they're still a long way to go. They've only played 4 games, and everybody took Iowa State last weekend. Now, depending on your number, you either got to push or you got to win because Iowa State had a back door. But if you watch that game, clearly Oklahoma State was the better team, and you should have got the cover if you bet Oklahoma State. Now I think this might be the spot where they can be got a little bit because Texas did have a week off to kind of get over that Oklahoma loss where they can kind of reassess and set new goals for the season. So I felt Texas, and I liked their defensive effort. I mean, it was a sluggish start, but I liked their defensive effort against Baylor. So I think maybe they found something there, and I'll be on the horns and the points.
Notre Dame and Georgia Tech, and this one could be ugly, Wes. We saw Notre Dame roll Pittsburgh last week, 45-3. We saw Georgia Tech get rolled by Boston College. I'm actually a little surprised that the Irish are only favored by 20 here on the road.
Yeah, and it's probably right. I initially made the number around 17. Keep in mind, Notre Dame does have the big showdown with Clemson next week in South Bend. So there is that potential look-ahead spot. Georgia Tech's really come back to earth. They got beat up by Clemson. They got beat up at Boston College. So I really couldn't get there anywhere on the side. But do have a play. I do kind of like the under here at 57.5 because I'm wondering how much Notre Dame is really going to want to put into this game with Clemson on deck here. Notre Dame, even though they pulverized Pittsburgh, remember when we were talking about that on the weekend show on the Green Zone, it's like this totals went down as enough where it's like you got to play the over, and Notre Dame ended up getting the over by itself because it was in the low 40s, 42.5, 43. And really it was because they hit a few big pass plays. Pitt turned it over deep in their own territory, so that made the score even more lopsided. And the fact that Pitt just wasn't very good in the game. But now you saw one of the things you saw with Notre Dame last week, they ran for less than 3 yards a carry. So they really couldn't run the ball, even though Ian Book was able to hit a couple big pass plays down the field. I mean, everybody, these favorites kind of get priced because of the style points factor. But I think the bottom line is Notre Dame's got to be ready for Clemson next week. That's what they're going to be judged on, no matter how much they beat Georgia Tech by. So
you got to believe Notre Dame is going to be a very public side.
It is.
We saw what they did to Pittsburgh. We saw what Boston College did to Georgia Tech. And 20 does look kind of cheap when you figure all that.
And they haven't,
I'm with you. I'm not going to run out and lay it.
Yeah, they haven't really been covering the big numbers either. Last week at Pitt, keep in mind, they were like 9.5 most of the week or 10. And now you're doubling that here at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is obviously in a rebuild mode. I think the defense is a little bit ahead of the offense, despite the fact they gave up 73 to Clemson 2 weeks ago. But under is my call here for this one.
Michigan State at Michigan. We spoke about this one with Dan Saley a little bit. Welcome to East Lansing, Mel Tucker. You having any fun yet?
Right. Yeah, a very late start in recruiting for Mel Tucker. This is one I haven't played. I really couldn't get there. On the surface, this looks too high because Michigan State, it's the series history. Because if you almost look at it, and it's very weird, Michigan's big rival is obviously Ohio State.
Right.
And not that Michigan State is not, but you've got one team in the state that looks at this as their big rivalry, yeah, and that would be Sparty from East Lansing. So a motivation, the edge is always kind of slightly with the Michigan State side, but those numbers were under Mark D'Antonio. I'd be treading lightly here on Michigan State anyway because they've scored 17 points in total the last two games against Michigan. So 8.5 points a game against the Wolverines. And I was impressed by the Wolverines last week.
I was too.
They lost four starters on the offensive line to the NFL, which is so hard to replace at any program. And they ran almost for 300 yards against Minnesota last week. So I do think maybe we should start talking about Michigan a little bit more, but the line has now gotten to the point where I think it really should be. Michigan State committed 7 turnovers, by the way, last week, even though they outgained Rutgers, and that was really what put them under.
I think if you like the Spartans here in this spot, you wait.
Yeah, you'll probably get a little better on Saturday.
Might get to 27 with the Michigan Wolverines. Ohio State and Penn State as we stay in the Big Ten. The Buckeyes have really seen the money. This opened up at 9. Now they are 12-point favorites here, and that's really understandable about considering what we saw last week as Ohio State rolled over Nebraska. And then Penn State, what a crazy finish as your Indiana Hoosiers win outright in that one, Wes. What do you see happening in this one?
Yeah, and I do like the Penn State side. Would like to get a little better on the number. I know I put out a plus 12.5 in our point spread weekly that will come out later this afternoon. Penn State always plays Ohio State tough. 4-1 ATS the last 5 under James Franklin against the Buckeyes. I don't think that they're going to have any problem getting over in terms of the disappointment to go against Ohio State. And then, look, yes, I'm an Indiana alum and a partisan, but Penn State outgained Indiana 488 to 211.
Wow.
Penn State's offense was very good. They just had 3 turnovers all in the first half, 100 yards in penalties, and we talked about that all last week, Brady. First game for these teams. You don't get to get away with 100 yards in penalties and 3 turnovers that you would against an Akron or a Bowling Green or an FCS opponent or a Sun Belt team. Even a team like Indiana, that's a middling Big Ten team, you can't get away with that, and Penn State wasn't able to. But they're a little bit shorthanded at running back. Journey Brown, of course, going to miss the year, and then Noah Cain is not going to play. But Penn State's got talent in that backfield, even though they got to go with the third and fourth team guys. I like them even at this number, 12.5, but you still may be able to get 13 or 14 on game day. But I don't think Penn State, don't dig their graves just yet in Happy Valley. I think they're going to be up for this one and give the Buckeyes a tough game. And the Buckeyes were better than Nebraska last week, but that wasn't a 35-point game.
No.
That was like a 17 to 20-point game.
Well, they were even apologetic for the last score, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have the right team on the field to take a knee.
Yeah, you could just take a knee instead of the apology. It's like, we got your apology, you know what, pal.
I don't know what kind of team you have to have on the field to take a knee. Guy with one leg, maybe?
Yeah. At least he's got to have one.
Next up, it's Betting Across America with Josh Applebaum and Mike Pritchard. Keep it here on VSiN for free all week long. VSiN.com, the sports betting network.